God and man had a falling out. God didn't go anywhere. But man walked away from God. And when man walked away from God, God had no choice but to remove man's right to live. In Romans chapter 6 and verse 23, Paul said, "The wages of sin is death." So when man walked away from God, the only alternative God had was to remove man's right to live. Now if you think about that for a minute, man needs his right to live restored. And so the restoration of man's right to live makes up the beautiful story we read in the Bible called the scheme of redemption. And today and tomorrow and Wednesday, Lord willing, we're going to be looking at atonement as it fits into the scheme of redemption. And the Lord willing, I want to do four things in these next 3 days. And we'll see how well I do. My students know that when I say I want to do four things, I may do two things because it takes me a long time to cover material. In the first place, I want us to look at atonement defined. Anytime you're dealing with terminology, you need to begin, in my judgment, with a definition. An accurate definition so that all parties will understand that of which we're speaking, so that we can at least be on the same page whether we're in agreement or not. One Hebrew word from which we get our word atonement is the word kephar, and it comes out in the English K-A-P-H-A-R. The root meaning of this word is to cover. And so when you look at the root meaning or the idea of covering from kephar, we're talking about the idea of expiating or condoning or canceling or placating. And so when we look at kephar and we begin to think about atonement from the standpoint of kephar, we're talking about the idea of covering. Placating whatever is involved, whatever needs taking care of, we do with this idea of kephar, atonement. But if we look at the word kopher, which comes out in the English K-O-P-H-E-R, the word from which we get our word ransom, I believe the meaning of kephar becomes even more clear and even more easily understood. When we look at this idea of ransom, we're talking about the idea of atoning by offering a substitute. Now think about that idea of offering a substitute, a ransom. When someone is kidnapped and the ransom is demanded, you are substituting that which is demanded for the person who has been kidnapped. The ransom is being paid. And thus the covering is taking place by means of substitution. Offering a substitute. The great majority of the usages concern the priestly ritual of sprinkling of sacrificial blood. And thus we talk about making an atonement for the worshiper. The blood is substituted. The covering takes place. The placation is there. But it is done by means of a substitute. Kopher, a ransom. There are 49 instances of this usage in Leviticus alone. And no other meaning in the book of Leviticus of kopher is witnessed. When you look at kopher, you're dealing with this idea of the ransom by substitution. It seems clear then that this word aptly illustrates the theology of reconciliation in the Old Testament. So notice what we've already seen, looking at Kefer and then looking at Kopher. We've seen the idea of a covering, we've seen the idea of a substitution, and we've seen the idea of a reconciliation. Remember, God and man had a falling out. And man walked away from God. And now man needs his right to live restored. How is that going to be done? How is that covering going to come? It must come by means of a substitute in order that the placation can take place and that God and man may be reconciled. The life of the sacrificial animal specifically symbolized by its blood was, and in my judgment here's the key word, required. It was required in exchange for, in ransom for, the life of the worshiper. Are you with me? God removed man's right to live. In order to give that life back, there has to be a requirement. What is that requirement? It's blood. And in the Old Testament, it is the blood of the animal. Sacrifices of animals in Old Testament theology was the symbolic expression of innocent life given for guilty life. So now we introduce two more terms, innocence and guilt. When man walked away from God, man became guilty. In order to be restored to God, he must again become innocent. How is that going to take place? It is required that the innocent life be given for the guilty. God worked that out in the scheme of Old Testament sacrifice. This symbolism is further clarified by the action of the worshiper in placing his hands on the head of the sacrifice and confessing his sins over the animal. Now, you've probably been sitting there thinking, is he ever going to get to the Bible? So maybe you'd like to look at Leviticus chapter 16 and verse 21. And there are other passages that are in the Bible, and especially in Leviticus, but I'm going to center in this passage for this idea. Leviticus 16 and verse 21. And you know here we're dealing with the Day of Atonement and the ritual of annual atonement and what is taking place. So what we're observing in verse 20, which begins the paragraph, when he hath made an end of atoning for the holy place and the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall present the live goat. And Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all of the iniquities of the children of Israel and all their transgressions, even all their sins. And he shall put them upon the head of the goat. And he shall send him away by the hand of a man that is in readiness into the wilderness. Now what do we have here? We have a substitution. Now, had I been Moses, and as you read the Pentateuch, you will realize Moses later on would a lot rather have sent those folks out into the wilderness instead of that goat. It would have been a lot easier to deal with the goat. But he had to deal with those folks. And when you think about what Moses went through, one of my questions, question number 14,332A, when I get to heaven is, why in the world did you hit the rock with all those people standing there that you could have hit and gotten out all of that frustration with which you were dealing? Well, when you think about it from what Moses went through, multiply that and you see what God goes through because of sin. It would have been a lot easier for God just send us on to hell, out into the wilderness. But see, that's not the God we serve. Now that's pagan thinking. A God that gets so angry just destroys. That's also the thinking of some religions about the God of the Old Testament. But that's not the God we read about in the Bible. It's a lot easier to get rid of us But God talks in terms of covering by means of substitution so that God and man can be brought back together and man can have his right to live. To me, that is the most beautiful picture ever painted. You will never improve on that picture. And what a marvelous thing that is. Now, the idea of the Greek words involved in atonement is that of God setting apart something or someone for Himself. Now, you see already in that concept, holy, consecration, sanctification, all those wonderful ideas of God setting apart something or someone for Himself. So we talk about the fact that we belong to God if we're Christians. Galatians 2:20 come to mind. It is not I that live. I don't own me anymore. But Christ that liveth in me. And the life that I now live. Look at the emphasis on live. I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me. Now look at substitution. And gave Himself up for me. So that God could set me apart for His complete use. I think Solomon grasped this. That sounds a whole lot to me like Ecclesiastes 12:13, does it to you? Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole. Duty is not there. This is the whole of man. Man is not complete until he is fearing God and keeping His commandments. Why is that? Because man is not complete until he has been wholly set apart for use by God. That's as foreign to the thinking of this world, ladies and gentlemen, as anything could ever be. This world says, I am not whole until I'm set apart for use by me. And as postmodernism continues its trek, you're going to see that develop more and more, and those of you who are in full-time preaching are going to have to deal with it. And it's an ugly picture. The prodigal son had that postmodern problem, did he not? Luke chapter 15. His whole life, when we're introduced to this young man, is summed up in two words in Luke 15. Give me. You can write his whole autobiography right there. But now, when he associated with the pigs for a little while, he came to a different outlook in life. And when he came back home, having been set apart now for a different use, his whole life is summed up in two words. As far as I know, he never got to say them, but he rehearsed them all the way home. Do you remember coming in late and knowing you better get that story just right, and you rehearsed it all the way home? You can see that boy coming all the way home. His whole life now, after that pig pen change, is summed up in two words. Make me. Now that's all the difference in the world when one is set apart for himself and he's set apart for someone else. Do you get the idea here of what atonement involves? I can't live for me and be atoned for by the substitute. I'm going to have to get outside of me. Now, I wish I could tell you I had learned how to do that without any problem. I am my worst problem. Trying to get rid of me is my real problem. I know none of you have any problem with that, but I empathize with the prodigal son. Make me. That's my generation. That's the theme of my generation. Give me, give me, give me. And God is trying to say, look, you're robbing yourself. Your theme needs to be make me, make me, make me. So we sing, mold me and make me after Thy will. All the difference in the world, isn't it? Now, the English word is derived from the phrase at one and signifies etymologically harmony of relationship or unity of life. Now, you think about it, the Hebrew idea, covering, expiation, ransom by means of a substitute. The Greek idea, set apart for holy use by God, and the English idea, at one unity of relationship, and you get the overall view of atonement. God and man are separated because man walked away from God. When man walked away from God, God had no choice but to remove man's right to live. Man needs his right to live restored. The scheme of redemption is God's plan for man to get his right to live restored. How does God do that? By means of substitution. In the Old Testament, an animal that looked forward to something. In the New Testament, the something to which the animal looked forward. And that is a wonderful unfolding of God's scheme of redemption. Now, what is this problem that caused God and man to be separated? Don't you wish it were a multi-syllable word so we could really feel like we've done something? S-I-N. It sounds so simple, and yet it is so powerful. Can you think of anything so powerful, even more powerful than sin? Now, we talk about the gospel, dynamite, dunamis. But have you ever thought about the dynamite that's in sin? Sin is so powerful that it can blast a man completely away from God. Now, that's hard to do. Paul said, I'm persuaded that height, nor depth, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, all of those things he listed, I'm persuaded that nothing can separate me from the love of God. But sin can separate me from fellowship with God. What a powerful word. Three little letters. Atonement, then, is the reconciling of God and man. Now, in order for this to be accomplished, sin has to be addressed. Brace yourself. I don't know if you're ready for this. I'm glad you're sitting down. Man could not handle the problem of sin in and of himself. That's a shocker to our generation, who believes that man can pull himself up by his own bootstraps regardless. Man, in the ideology of our world, is the master of his destiny. Our world today has deified man and humanized God. David Wells wrote a book, God in the Wasteland, in which he gave the idea that in our society today, it's not so much as folks just denying God. It's not so much as people saying God doesn't exist. It's just folks ignore God. Our problem today is they ignore God. And sin is at the root. Jeremiah 10 and verse 23 reminds us it is not in man that walks to direct his steps. So in and of himself, man cannot address the sin problem. And yet sin blasted us away from God and caused God to remove our right to live. Reconciliation, I'm trying to get my right to live back. So God's plan for atonement becomes the central theme of the Bible following the fall in the Garden of Eden. Now there are a lot of themes of the Bible, but the central theme from Eden forward is reconciliation of God and man. That's all basically with which you deal from Eden on. And as one reads the Bible, he is impressed with the love of God. Don't try to tell me you don't have love and grace and mercy in the Old Testament. It is, as one fellow said, chock full of it. Because had there not been grace and mercy and love in the Old Testament, God would have said, "Fooey on you," and sent man out into the wilderness instead of the goat. That's grace. That's mercy. That's love. What did man ever do to deserve, earn any of that? That put God in debt to have to do it? Not a single thing. In and of himself, man can't do that. So grace and love and mercy. Our new hermeneutics folks need to go back and understand the Old Testament. Amen. And they'll understand grace. So we didn't learn about grace 50 years ago. You don't read the book of Genesis. What do you get in chapter 6? Noah found favor. Now, grace is in the Garden of Eden, but it's stated in Genesis 6. So you have to ignore the Old Testament to miss the story of redemption as it involves grace and love and mercy. But as I read the Bible, I'm impressed with the love of God in His manifestation in order to bring about the fullness of time, so that He could send forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, that carries with it the idea, in order that He might redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons, Galatians 4, 4 and 5. Now you have another concept, redeem. We've talked about expiation, covering. We've talked about substitution. We've talked about reconciliation. Now we're talking about ransom, and we've talked about redemption. All of those terms wrap themselves up in this idea of atonement. Now you see why I don't cover material very quickly. There's just so much that we need to grasp to get an idea of atonement. And if folks ever knew atonement as it's presented in the Bible, they never would have put the word limited in front of it. That's a missing of the whole concept of God's atoning plan. God and man brought back together. I could see Tom Holland using that for the title of a book. That's what God used in principle for the title of His book. That would be an appropriate theme for the whole Bible. God and man brought back together. Can you think of anything more appeasing and appealing and pleasing? That just sounds good, doesn't it? God and man brought back together. I think poetically the songwriter caught it, didn't he? My God and I walked through the fields together. We laugh and talk as good friends should and do. We clasp our hands. Our voices ring with laughter. My God and I walk through the meadows, Hugh. And someone appended to that a beautiful verse when he said, the stars shine over the ocean, the stars shine over the sea. The stars look up to God, the stars look down on me. The stars will shine for a million years in a day. But God and I will live and love when the stars have passed away. Now that's atonement. That's expiation. That's reconciliation. That's ransom. That's redemption. By means of substitution. So the doctrine of atonement deals with the covering of sin and the reconciliation of God and man. Now here's the key. Through the death of Jesus on the cross of Calvary. And folks say, let's hurry up and get the Lord's Supper over with so we can go on about our business. This do in remembrance of me. Those of us who've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, when the preacher says, if anyone is here today who is not a Christian, we go, click, I've heard all that before. Grab psalm books, put on coats, get the children ready, because we've already heard the plan of salvation. Brethren, every time a redeemed, atoned man hears the plan of salvation, it means more to him than it did the last time. There ought to be stunned silence among atoned people when we're being reminded of that precious plan which God prepared. Amen. To atone for my sins. And when I think that God, His Son not sparing, sent Him to die, I scarce can take it in. That on the cross, my burden gladly bearing, He bled and died to take away sin. Now that's atonement. And that's atonement defined as God lays it out in the Old Testament. The second thing I want to do today is talk about sin, the necessity of atonement. Had it never been for that little three-letter word, we wouldn't be here today. Everything was going fine until sin came along. I sometimes tell our students, we'd have a great school. We'd not fool with all these students. Well, God had a great plan going until he had to fool with sin. God and man were together. Everything was fine. But the devil couldn't leave well enough alone. Does he do you that way? Just about the time well enough sets in, he won't leave it alone. And he messes everything up, and God still is working through the blood of Jesus on Calvary in our behalf to make sure the devil doesn't really mess it up if we don't want it messed up. I think that's the message of John 10, isn't it? If I don't want it messed up, the devil can't mess it up. He can't snatch me out of his hand. I have to want him to have his way with me if he does. So we'll talk about sin. Romans 5:12. Through one man, sin entered into the world. Harmatia is the term most used in the New Testament for the idea of sin. And it probably is best translated with that word, sin. The verb equivalent to the noun harmatia means to transgress, to do wrong, to sin against God. The older idea of missing the mark is not adequate to translate its New Testament meaning. It is failure, but it is more than failure. For example, in Mark chapter 2 and verse 5, harmatiai, plural, require to be forgiven. It's more than just failure. It is a failure that requires forgiveness. In Hebrews 1 and verse 3, harmatiai require cleansing. Not just a failure, but a failure that requires cleansing. In John 9 and verse 41, harmatia is more than failure. It is a responsible condition or characteristic involving guilt. Paul speaks of harmatia in personal terms in Romans 5:12 and 5:21. In Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13, harmatia has deceptive power. And that's why the warning is there. So yes, harmatia is a failure. It is a missing of the mark, but don't stop there. It is a failure that requires something. It is a failure that demands something. It is a failure that can deceive. But when you go back to the Old Testament, there are three basic ideas associated with sin which need to be examined in their relationship to atonement. And these are seen in three Hebrew words used to designate sin. Now look with me again, please, to Leviticus 16:21. Notice that Aaron is going to lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat. And then notice this. He is going to confess over him. Now I'm reading from the American Standard Version of 1901. That's the one Paul used when he withstood Peter to the face. Now notice what he's going to do here. Confess over him what three things? Number one, all the iniquities of the children of Israel. Mark that word, iniquities. And all their transgressions. Mark that word, transgressions. Even all their sins. Mark that word, sins. And those three ideas are the ideas with which we will deal in this idea of atonement. Now, first of all, the word sin. The Hebrew word kata, it comes out in the English C-H-A-T-A. The root of this word occurs 580 times in the Old Testament, and so you see it's the principal word for sin in the Old Testament. The basic meaning of this root word of kata is to miss a mark. or a way. To miss a way. Most women would say it's patterned after male driving patterns. Because we won't stop and ask directions. So we miss the way. Well, you get the idea. When I lived in Atlanta, they told me about a fellow who was pitching for the Atlanta Braves, a foreigner. Everybody in Atlanta is a foreigner unless they come from Atlanta. But he got on 285. Now, you've never lived till you've ridden 285. And he got on 285, which is the perimeter around Atlanta, and he couldn't figure out how to get off. And he was supposed to pitch that night, and he missed the pitching assignment. That's a true story. And I'm told they traded him to a city where he could find his way to the ballpark. But you get this idea of missing the way. You're missing the mark. It carries with the idea of an archery term. Those of you who sat up in tree stands at 3 o'clock in the morning and frozen to death and had little talks with yourself, and then all of a sudden that big buck presents himself and you get buck fever and you couldn't hit the side of a barn and you let that arrow go, you've missed the mark. And then you have another little talk with yourself. The verb has the connotation of breach of civil law. For example, in Genesis 40 and verse 1, it is the failure to live up to expectations. Extended to religious observations or obligations, the form hatamin in Leviticus chapter 4 verse 2 designates a failure to observe God's laws. And in Leviticus 5 verse 16 denotes action which gives less than is due. A failure of full duty. In the many instances in which the verb occurs in the cause stem, the object is either God or His laws. And when that's not the case, the verb is intransitive. In so acting, man is missing the goal or standard God has for him. He is failing to observe the requirements of holy living, or he falls short of spiritual wholeness. That's the idea of sin here. He doesn't measure up, not to his own standard, but to the standard God set for him in relationship to God's law. Thus, like other words, the notion of sin, or related rather to the notion of sin, it assumes an absolute standard or law. You deal with ethics and you talk about absolutists who believe in an absolute standard. That's us, folks. And that's an ugly word to the people in our world today. Anyone who has the audacity to believe in an absolute standard. If you don't have an absolute standard, you'll never understand the concept of sin. If you don't understand the concept of sin, you'll never understand the concept of atonement. And if you don't understand the concept of atonement, you're going to live like an animal. And that's what people are telling us. Atonement. Tomorrow. Same bat channel, same bat time. Thank you for listening.